form of eternal bliss and knowledge, which never changes or suffers deterioration of internal potency. I surrender unto you, whose body is the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and yet remains one, untouched by matter. It is the origin of all elements and all senses. O Lord, who are auspicious for all the universes, since you have manifested this eternal form in my meditation, for my auspicious benefit, I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Those who are destined to be dispatched to the path of hell, neglect your personal form because of speculating on material topics. Okay, that is the paragraph. Man, what is Brahma saying here? Okay, this form is very auspicious for the devotees to see. It's not a new form. You assumed it at the beginning of creation. And all the other incarnations, many other incarnations come from it. And I come from it also. Brahma cannot imagine any form greater than Lord Garbhodakshay Vishnu's form. It's eternal. It doesn't change. It never deteriorates. Its energies, potencies never deteriorate. It's the cause of the cosmic manifestation. And still, it stays as it is. And it's not, even though it creates the material energy, it's not affected by the material energy. So, therefore, he's worshipable. That form of the Lord is worshipable. Bhavatam ultimately is pointing toward worship, not just toward philosophical understanding or self-identification and merging. Our business is not to merge. Our business is not just to categorize the Supreme Truth, to understand it theoretically, to dissect it like some specimen. And our business is not to merge into the Absolute Truth. Our business is to develop love for the Absolute Truth. So worship is the final aim of all this understanding. Here's the commentary. Several cogent reasons having been presented, it can now be concluded as proven that the personal form of the Supreme Lord is itself the topmost reality, the origin, regulator, and support of everything that exists. So this is Vedanta philosophy. You can call it philosophy, but it's actually very logical. It's called, in the Sanskrit terminology, the Vedanta is called Nyaya, which means logic. It's not just guesswork. It gives good reasons. Of course, you cannot prove the existence and nature of God to a materialist. He'll never understand. He'll never accept. But those who are faithful, those who can listen with some trust, can hear from the Upanishads what is the nature of the Absolute Truth. So real philosophy is logical. It is actually proves something. At least it proves the truth to those who are receptive. Okay, continuing. These reasons leading to the conclusion that the body of God is the Absolute Truth. These reasons have been discussed in the previous anuchedas. That the Supreme Lord's form is self-manifest was shown in text 10, anuchade number 10, which was a long anuchade. That it is eternal, that the form is eternal, was discussed in text 26 through 29. That it is infinite and all-pervading was discussed in text 30 through 44, a long passage. That it transcends all gross and subtle materialities was discussed in text 44 and 45. And that the body of God can be realized within the heart was discussed in text 45. And that it is the shelter of all was discussed in text 47, paragraphs 6 and 7. Okay, so all those reasons, they were discussed previously in this Sandarbha. Now we're summing up from all these things that have been proven. And then later in text 96, Anuchet 96, it will be shown that the divine nature of this form is verified by the consensus opinion of all the Vedas. The most learned of wise authorities, Brahma, has formulated this conclusion in the prayers he offered to his creator, Lord Vishnu, in the ninth chapter of the third canto of the Bhagavatam. He did this before commencing his own work of completing the creation of the universe. These reasons can also be traced in what Brahma says in the three verses cited here, as Srila Swami demonstrates in his commentary. Okay, Jiva Goswami lists the reasons. All those reasons are there in these three verses by Brahma also. What about Sridhar Swami? Okay, Sridhar Swami comes up with his explanation of these three verses in the next paragraph. Any questions? Dabra Gopal.
This Sarva Shruti Saman Vaya Siddhatvat, wasn't it already seen, at least throughout the text, that, because he quotes so much from the Shrutis.
Quotes about what?
About his form being... Wasn't that covered to some degree, or not completely?
Yeah, it's been in a ongoing way, yes. But it's going to be summed up. That is going to be summed up in Anuchet 96. All right, Bharat Ramprabhu.
I wanted to know how Pratyak Rupatva is translated as the Lord who lives in the heart.
Pratyaksha? Is it
Pratyak Rupatva? In one of the reasons that are given, that Sukshma.
Well, the Parangrupa and Parangrupa. What shows its form on the outside is Parangrupa, but what can only be seen on the inside is Pratyak Rupa. The form is extended inwardly rather than outwardly. So, but he has a form, but that form is inside. Well, the place where it is inside is specified where it is inside, in the heart. I mean, that's what it usually means in Vedanta, when you talk about Pratyagrupa. Usually what it means is located in the heart, realized inside, but in the heart, not in your fingernails or somewhere else. Yeah. Okay. Madan Mohanpur.
Quick remark. It looks like in your translation, the terms which are used as translations for Svaprakashatvat and Pratyak Rupatvat are swapped in their order. In other words, they don't follow. Is it done deliberately, or you want to put it?
No. Let me check that. Svaprakashatvat and then the other one is.
Pratyak Rupatvat and Svaprakashatvat. They're swapped.
Okay, Pratyak Rupatvat and Svaprakashatvat. This would be one, two, three, the fourth and fifth reasons. Let's see. Oh boy.
Is it, or am I?
But because it appears with the heart should be, that's pratyagrupatvat. We were just discussing that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I'm mistaken.
Yeah. Okay, no, it's right.
It's my mistake.
And the next one is for prakashatvat.
Sorry, yeah. It's my mistake.
It's okay. All right. Anything else? We move on. Now Sridhar Swami explains these three verses. I think, I don't know if he explains all three or just two of them here. Tika cha nanu twamapi sanyang na janasi yat twaya drishtam rupam etadapi gunatmakam eva nirgunam brahmaiva tusatyam. The commentary on these verses says, but even you do not understand correctly, since this form you have seen is also only material. I guess this is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu raising the Purva Paksha, speaking to Brahma. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is answering Brahma. But even you do not understand correctly, since this form you have seen is also only material. Whereas the impersonal Brahman, devoid of qualities, is the actual reality. So if Garbhadakshaya Vishnu tells you that, what do you say? This is what Brahma... Yes, sir. Tatraha rupam iti dvabhyam. Well, Brahma answers it by speaking two verses. Two verses beginning rupa. Avabodha dasodayena chitchatyavirbhavena shashvam divittam tamo yasmat tasya tava yadetad rupam. Okay, he's analyzing it word by word here. Sridhar Swami. This form of that person means you, from which ignorance is perpetually kept away by the what is called the rise of the taste of pure consciousness, the manifestation of your spiritual energy, in other words. Let's see, have I read the Sanskrit for the next part? Yeah, okay. Of the taste of pure consciousness, or in other words, the manifestation of your spiritual energy, has been taken by you only. Well, that can mean it's been revealed by you only, prakashita, because you are independent, and you've revealed it. You've revealed the manifestation of your spiritual energy for the favoring of saintly persons. Saintly persons means your devotees, your worshippers. And which is the one seed, well, we can say seed poetically, but we mean root, of your hundreds of incarnations in the pure mode of goodness. Lord Vishnu's incarnations don't grow out of seeds. You know, they're not vegetables. Although I guess Lord Vishnu can appear in all species of life, including vegetables. But usually he doesn't grow out of seeds. But that's just poetic. Hundreds of incarnations in the pure mode of goodness. I think I skipped. I didn't read all the Sanskrit here. Well, Twayaiva Swatantriyena Satam Upasakanam Anugrahaya Grihitam. Words grihita in the verse, Brahma says, but that means avishkritam, manifested. Avatara shaktasya shuddha sattvatmakasya yad ekam bijam. The one seed or the one root. Brahma says bija. Sridhar Swami says you can take that to mean mula. Seed means root. So it doesn't grow out of seed, it grows out of a root. Vishnu avatar. And there are hundreds of them, and they're all composed of pure goodness. Going back to the translation. Okay, continuing. Tad pradarshanartam gunavatara bijatvam darshayati yan nabi iti. I think this is the last line of the first verse. Yan nabi padma bhavanada hamavirasam, from whose navel home I took birth. So, the translation of that. To demonstrate this, he, or Brahma, shows how that form, the form of Vishnu, is the seed of the incarnations who preside over the material modes. He says this by the words beginning, from whose navel. Hey, Parama, Avidhavarcho, Anavrita Prakasham. He addresses him, Parama. Okay, the word Parama's there. We were talking about Parama. We had two meanings for Parama in the previous verse. One is that he's the husband of the supreme Ma, or that he's beyond regular Ma, Maya. Here's another meaning of Parama, according to Sridhar Swami in this verse. Oh, supreme Parama, meaning that form whose effulgence is unbroken, whose illumination is never covered. Is Avidhavarcha in the verse?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a separate word. Okay, so supreme, O supreme, O form whose effulgence is never unbroken, whose illumination, in other words, is never covered. And then continuing, ato vikalpam, avikalpam, nirbedam ata eva ananda matram, eva bhutam, yad bhavatak sarupam tat. So that form is thus undifferentiated or undivided. And thus it is, this form is pure bliss. This form, which is like this, is your original self. I do not see anything other than or different from that form. Rather, I see only that form. Ato rupat param binam napashyami kintu idam eva tat. Atak karanat te tava ada idam rupam ashritosmi. That's the first verse. Rather, I see only that form. Therefore, I take shelter of that, or this visible form of yours. Now, looking at the second verse, explained by Sridhar Swami. Yogyatvad apiti aha ekam upasyeshu mukhyam yato vishvasrijam ata eva avishvam vishvasmad anyat. Brahma says, ekam, vishvasrijam, and avishvam. It's one, it's the creator of the universe, and it's not the universe. He takes shelter also because it is suitable to do that, to take shelter. It is the one, Brahma says, it is the one, the chief among objects of worship, because it is the creator of the universe. And therefore, it is not the universe. It is different than the universe. That which creates something else is probably different than that something else. And continuing, Kimcha bhutendriyatmakam Bhutanam indriyanam cha atmanam karanam ityartaha. Furthermore, it is bhutendriyatmakam, the self, or in other words, the cause of the elements and the senses. Okay, but now that raises an objection. Nanu nanvevam api sopadikam etad arvachinam evet yashankya aha. Okay, if the body of the Lord is the cause of the elements and the senses, the objection says, but that means that this form is only apparently real and is a recent creation. Okay. He's figuring that the cause of the recent creation must itself be pretty recent. But Brahma answers, we're in the second verse. Now we're in the third verse. Okay. Aha tadvai tadevedam hey bhuvana mangala yatas te twaya no asmakam upasakanam mangalaya dhyani darshitam na hyavyakta vartmabhi divesita chittanam asmakam twaya sopadikam darshanam datum yuktam iti bhavaha. Okay, this doubt is anticipated and answered. O you, from whom comes the auspiciousness of the worlds? Because for the auspiciousness of us, your worshippers, that same, this very form, was shown by you in our meditation. It would not be right at all for you to reward us, whose minds are fixed on the path of the unmanifested, with a vision of something only apparently real. We meditated. You're showing us some favor. You're happy with our meditation. We are devotees of the absolute truth. Why would you reward us, being pleased with our meditation, by showing us an illusion? If the personal form of God is an illusion, why would you be showing us some illusion? We don't want to see an illusion. So what you're showing us must be real. Then, na hyavyaktav, atas tubyam namo nuvidema anuvritya karavama tarhi. Okay, let's translate that. Therefore, let us properly present, let us compliantly offer our obeisances to you. Okay, you decide to offer your obeisances, but the Lord asks, tarhi kimiti kechin mam nadriyante tatraha yo anadvita iti asat prasangaya nirishvara kutarka nishtai ityesha. That's the end of Sridhar Swami's comments on these three verses. The Lord may ask, but why then do some not respect me? If you give me a good reason why to worship me, how come a lot of people don't? This he, Brahma, answers by the words beginning, who is not respected. He's not respected by those who are engaged in impure topics, meaning by those who trust the false logic of atheism. All right. Let me check one thing. All these Purva Pakshas are actually spoken by Vishnu. Okay. Let's read the commentary. Srila Sridhar relates as the motivation for Brahma speaking these verses an objection that might have been raised by the Lord being prayed to. Okay, the Lord is raising these objections, hypothetically. Lord Vishnu addresses Brahma ironically. It is very good that Brahma decries the hypocrisy of hell-bound atheists, but he is just as ignorant as them of the Supreme's true impersonal identity. To defend himself, Brahma addresses his Lord as the absolute truth in person, detailing in brief what it involves to be the Supreme. The body of God has all the unique qualities of the absolute truth, at least 13 of which Brahma mentions in the first two verses. 13 qualities he mentions in two verses. The Lord's, here's the qualities. The Lord's body appears as an expression of the ecstasies he feels within himself, of a bodha rasodayena. The Lord's body is eternally luminous, never attacked by the darkness of ignorance. Shashwat nivritta tamas. It displays itself especially to favor the Lord's pure devotees. Sadanugrahaya grihitam. The original form of the Lord is the single seed from which countless other forms of himself expand and make their appearances in the material world. Avatara shataika bijam. The incarnations in the material world, including Brahma, and the other incarnations for supervising the modes of material nature, the guna avatars. Brahma took birth from this body of the Lord in the house of the lotus growing from his navel, yannabi padma bhavanat. No other object in any realm surpasses the perfection of this form, natat param, which is composed of pure delight, ananda matram. This body is ever free from change, it is avikalpam, and from deterioration of its innate potency, the radiance of which nothing can eclipse, avidya varchas. The entire creation of the material realm emanates from it, Vishwasrik, and yet it remains alone and one without a division. Without division, Akam. Screwdriver, I'll hold it. Separate from the material creation. It's Avishwam. Just as any cause which is able to create without depleting itself continues to exist in its own right after producing effects. Maybe there's some causes that have to use themselves up, but other causes don't. They can create many things without being exhausted. This body is the origin of all the elements of matter and all the functions of life. Bhutendri Atmakam. So in two verses, those are 13 qualities mentioned of the Lord's body. According to the impersonal view of the Advaitavadis, the qualities of the Supreme Lord's form must be upadis, imaginary features created by the inexplicable power of illusion. Because ultimately, the Supreme has no separate qualities. In other words, any conception of the Supreme conditioned by imaginary features, sopadikam, darshanam, including any idea of a personal God with particular forms and names, only seems to be real and is accepted as worshipable only by the unenlightened. That's the Mayavadi opinion. The personal form of the Lord, the personal form of Ishvara, is recent, at least relative to Brahma, who is speaking these words. It only comes into being after Maya begins her work of degrading the One Supreme to conditions of imperfect duality. Fortunately for the Vaishnavas, who are members of the Sampradaya founded by him, Brahma rejects the Advaita Vad view. Why would you deceive me, your devotee, with a false show? This personal form of yours must be the supreme reality. Well, Vishnu answers, well, you might consider yourself my devotee. I won't discourage your eagerness to show me respect. But what about the many others who don't have that eagerness, who ignore or dishonor me? Brahma answers, let them speak whatever nonsense they want. It means nothing to me. Their opinions are invalid. Okay, any questions about that? Bart, Andrew?
I had a question and a comment.
Comment.
One question also. Couldn't such commentaries of Sridhar Swami be used to conclusively prove that he was not a Mayavadi?
Who was?
Sridhar Swami. Such commentaries by Sridhar Swami, wherein he establishes clearly that the form of the Lord is above the above even impersonal Brahman.
Yes. Throughout his commentaries, you can see that he's no Mayavadi. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who doesn't like Mayavadis at all, considers Sridhar Swami unquestionable authority on everything he says about Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami may say that he sometimes throws out some tidbits with the Mayavadis to attract them, but it doesn't mean that he is actually promoting any impersonalist viewpoint. Not in the opinion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes.
There was a comment that the first objection that Vishnu raises, saying that Tvamapi na janasi, even you don't know, that is in response to Brahma's first verse of the prayers. Whereas, yes. It would be useful for the readers to point that out in the commentary also, that it is from a verse that Brahma has already spoken.
Let's see. Where is this? This is my commentary, right? All right, the very first paragraph. So you're saying this happens at the end of the first verse?
Yeah, the verse that he spoke just before the list of verses that begin here. It begins
you
from
mean, this. You mean the verse before these three?
Yeah, that
okay.
Which was the first verse.
Okay, this is not my file. Can you remind me this? My computer is broken, so can you write it down on a piece of paper for me, what you just said? Yes. I'll have to make a note to add something to this first paragraph of the commentary, but I can't, I don't have my computer now to type it in.
Fine.
Okay. Dhamma Gopal.
See, starting here, Eparama Avida Varcho Navrita Prakasham Ato Vikalpam Nirbeda Ata Eva. Are these reasons like that follow each other? He's Avidarcha, therefore is Vikalpam.
Well, therefore the conclusion that Brahma draws is therefore I worship you. Therefore I bow down to you and worship you.
Yeah, but in the commentary. Is it just furthermore or therefore? Like Avita Varcho.
Let me see. Well, there are reasons. Yeah, well.
Subsequent reasons.
There are reasons for. There are replies to the objections. The first objection is that. Yes? That you don't know what you're talking about. This body you're looking at is material. So all these first qualities are spoken to say, no, this body is not material. It's of a bodhara sodhya, shashvan nivritta tamas, and so on. That's the answer to the first objection. Then there's other objections, and other qualities in the second and third verse are answering those objections.
Yeah, it says here, like, Hey Parama, Avida Varchu.
Hold a second. Hey Parama, yeah?
You see?
I see.
Avida Varchu Navrita Prakasham. Ato Vikalpam Nirvedam.
Well, he's showing, what he's doing is tracing that one reason is the reason for the next reason.
Okay, so that's it.
Sometimes.
In this comment, that's what it says.
Okay. Yeah.
That he's.
You can see that kind of logic in the verses is sometimes there, that it's not just a lot of disconnected reasons, but sometimes one reason is the reason for the next reason. Sometimes.
So what's the reasons for each other here? That his form is not, his effulgence is not covered.
Where's that? Avidavarcha. Okay. Yeah.
Therefore, he's non-different. And therefore, he has...
Well, that's what he says.
...supreme bliss.
Yes, that's what Shira Swami is saying.
Okay. How they connect with each other? Can you...
Well, let's look at it. First thing is that his effulgence is not covered. And that means that he's not differentiated. Well, I guess if you turn it around, if something's differentiated... You can cover its effulgence. Something can be shadowed if it's finite. You can't put a shadow on something that's infinite. No, but difference also means no limit. If something has a finite dimension, that's a difference. It's the end of it. But something that has no divisions should have no end either. So you can't have a reflection or you can't have a shadow on top of something that's infinite, that has no limit.
And this no limit is only one thing, it's Ananda.
Well, because it has no limit, therefore it's only ecstasy. I spelled Ananda wrong too. See that? Yeah. I got a long A, Ananda.
Yeah. It should be written on there.
Could you also make a note of that I added an extra long A and Ananda? I got two long A's. You see? Oh. I need someone to write. Yeah, I need to write a note of that mistake for me. Well, let's see. If something has no differences, then it must be just bliss. Well. If something has no differences, it can only be one thing. Maybe it could be something else. Maybe it could be green cheese. But it has to be some one thing. It can't be more than one thing. How do we choose which one thing the absolute truth is? Well, we can listen to the Upanishads. The Upanishads tell us, Satyam Gyanam that the absolute truth is Ananda. The Taittiriya Upanishad tells us that. Anandamayo Vyasat. The absolute truth is the Anandamayo Purusha. We know he's Ananda because the Upanishads tell us that. The absolute truth. And the absolute truth can't be anything else. It can't be 5% Ananda and 95% misery and confusion. If he's going to be Ananda, he's got to be completely Ananda because he doesn't have any differences. Do you follow that? That was your question, right? How does being not having any divisions mean that he's only bliss?
Yeah.
Well, he's only something. He can only be one thing because he has no divisions. It can't be two things or three things. And we know that he's Ananda from the Upanishads. So the logic is that he's only Ananda, nothing else. Yes? Madan Mohanbu. Can we turn the microphone over here on the side?
We could also say that, as you have just explained, because his effulgence is not covered... Well, which means that there is nothing to cover the effulgence. There is nothing separate from him. And there is no... Like, to cover means to it admits the existence of something separate from me, which prevents me from functioning in a particular direction.
Yeah.
So because there is no, his effulgence is uncovered, there is nothing to cover it. It's like an internal statement of his state, yes, of being,
yes,
everything. And ananda or happiness means that there is no thing which obstructs my volition. In other words, there is nothing which I wish it didn't exist, or that nothing which doesn't exist which I wish to exist. Know what I mean?
Okay.
So, something like that. So
but
it,
then you're
it
presenting,
kind of,
you're
it
presenting,
kind of falling from that.
You're presenting the first quality as reason for the third quality.
No, the first is the reason to the second reason to the third.
Oh, but the third, Ananda Mantra is the third.
Yes.
Anavrita Prakasha or Vitavarta is the first. In between is Nirbheda. Oh, I see. You're
just to give another reason to what
yes,
you have
yes,
just said.
Yes. Okay.
Because
okay.
There's nothing preventing my desires from
yes.
From fulfilling.
Uh-huh.
I want to have a quick question if I could.
A question, yeah.
Sridhar Swami gives an argument here, a logical argument that he says, because you are the source, you are the cause of this universe, therefore you're not in the universe itself. How does it logically work? Because, for instance, we have a bija, a seed, which is not the tree, but the tree grows from the seed, and then the seed stops existing. But we cannot argue that the seed is fundamentally different from the tree.
Not fundamentally different, but it has to be a difference. And actually, this is the definition of karanam given in Nyaya Shastra. Something is, A is the cause of B. If A is something other than B, that has to exist before B, and whose presence cannot be explained by any other reason. That's Gotama's definition. Logicians give this definition of cause. It has to exist prior to the result. And it can't just be circumstantially prior, it has to be necessarily prior. So to be prior means to be different. If I was here before you, I can't be the same as you. If I'm the same as you, we'll have to show up at exactly the same time. So for the cause to exist before the product, it has to be different than the product. I'm not saying absolutely different. I'm not saying substantially completely different, but in some way different.
So this kind of reasoning doesn't necessarily prove that the Lord is transcendental, just prove that he's different from the universe, is it?
Right, but the universe comprises everything material. If you can find anything outside the universe, it'll be transcendental.
Well, we have Mahatattva Pradhana, which is not universe necessarily, just
well,
a state.
Okay,
we
that's
Kala.
Material creation.
Kala, we have.
It's not any particular one universe, but it's the Mahatattva is the primordial soup out of which all the universes come. It's the proto-universe. And the Pradhana is the original of the Mahatattva. That's all material creation. But if you can find something outside material creation, I don't just mean on the periphery, but outside of it, that'll be spiritual. Isn't it? You know what? Can you identify anything that's not in the material realm but isn't spiritual?
No, that could be. In other words, by saying that he is not the universe,
means he's spiritual.
He may or he may not be transcendental.
He has to be transcendental. Anything that's not material is transcendental. It may not be the supreme. It may be a subordinate transcendental. But anything that's not material is transcendental.
So that then by the word Vishva, we mean not that.
Because that's what transcendental means, not material. Yeah, the Sanskrit word is aprakrita.
So then by the word Vishva, we mean here not the secondary creation of Brahma, but the whole realm of material existence, does it? Do we?
Yeah, Vishva in a broad sense.
Like in broad sense. That's important because that logic which you've just described applies.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you just mean that universe, manifest universe,
yes.
That doesn't apply because there are realms of material existence which are not manifest.
Yeah. It's not just the five boroughs of Manhattan, you know, of New York, but it's greater New York.
The whole thing.
The greater universe. Okay. Anything else? Yes?
Is there anything that's material but that's not manifested in the universe?
Anything that's material but not in the universe. No, there's nothing material in the spiritual realm. So where are you going to put it? If you're not, you got a material thing, okay?
Yeah.
And they say, sorry, we had no more room in the material world. Put it somewhere else. Where are you going to put it? They won't let you put it in the spiritual world.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
you can't put anything material in the spiritual world. There's nowhere else to put it.
I mean,
it's
got to
be put in the material world.
It's in the. I mean, the universe is the realm for
where everything material is.
Okay, apart from the universe, it's spiritual.
Yeah, there's nothing else. It's the law of excluded middles. It's either material or spiritual. There's no third category.
So when we say
we can talk about personal and impersonal, we can divide up the spiritual into personal and impersonal. But there's only material and spiritual. There's no third category.
But material universe and material world is synonymous.
Well, material universe is the place where all the material things are. They're segregated. They don't get mixed up.
Yeah.
The only point of mixture is on the edge where the jivas are. They get mixed up. They get involved in both worlds. The jivas.
So,
what are you going to do with these crazy jivas? They're on the edge. They're sort of both in both worlds, but they're on the intersection between one world and the next. But there's no third world. There's no third, cosmos beside the spiritual cosmos and the material cosmos. The jivas could be either in both, either or on the edge of both. Yes.
Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, was it Dhruva Maharaj? He says that Brahman it combines both vidya and avidya in itself. In other words, it's not exactly full-fledged spiritual because of us being there, and it's not exactly material because it's completely eternal and full of consciousness.
Dhruva is actually saying that Brahman is not really spiritual?
No, he says that Brahma has both vidya and avidya manifest in it.
But doesn't that mean that the absolute truth includes all of his energies, both material and spiritual? Now we're going, not where you've got two realms, the spiritual and the material, but the absolute truth includes both. Then we're not saying that Brahman is something inferior, but we're talking about Brahman in the sense of the absolute truth. It's everything, both material and spiritual.
If you define it as a manifestation of the Lord, of course he doesn't have anything material in it. But if you define Brahman as a place where such rebellious jivas who haven't yet manifested their material activities are stuck.
You're talking about just we're limiting it. Impersonal Brahman.
Impersonal Brahman, yeah. Brahman. Yeah. That's what Dhruva Maharaj is talking about there. Impersonal Brahman.
Yeah.
And he says that both qualities are manifest there. In other words, it looks like this. It's the contaminated consciousness.
Is impersonal Brahman a different entity
from
Bhagavan?
No.
So it's just Bhagavan. If the jivas are in Brahman, they may think they're in an impersonal realm, but actually they're in Bhagavan. They're in the spiritual world. The Brahma Jyoti is part of the spiritual world. It's the Vaikuntha sky. Where else are you going to put this? Where else is this Brahman that's not really spiritual? It's actually, Brahman is actually located in the spiritual realm.
Oh yeah, that's unquestionable. It's the living entity.
But if it's not fully spiritual, what is it doing there? It would be kicked out.
No, it's unquestionable. But the living entities which are stuck in Brahman, which don't have a sense of service to the Lord, and they have contaminated consciousness. That consciousness is not a material element, but it's also the beginning of the spiritual, of the material existence, like
well,
the seed form of material existence.
Yeah,
that's the contaminated thing.
I'm sorry.
You could say that's something which is not not yet material, but it's not already spiritual. It's like in between.
Well, what it is the jivas are purely spiritual. They're spiritual entities. But their consciousness can get dirty. And for that, they get kicked out of the spiritual world. They're pushed down into the material realm because they let their consciousness get dirty. You know, if you don't wash your feet, your mother will kick you out of the house.
But they can hang around in Brahman for an indefinite period of time from our material point of view. Right? So that might be the thing which Dhruva Maharaj refers to by avidya.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll stop for now. Thank you, all glorious Srila Prabhupada. Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha Ki Jai.